Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World, episode 123. I'm your host, John Jordan, and after our successful triple act in episode 100, so that was pretty cool. So I've brought back David Amore from Playmint and Will Luton from Village Studios. We're going to sort of talk a little bit about what's been going on this year, the year 2022 in crypto and blockchain gaming. But before we do that, David, introduce yourself quickly.
Oh, okay, long time games guy, lots of console, PC, mobile, now building on-chain games, Web3 games.
Can you tell us exactly what is your title? Sure. Public yet?
We're building an on-chain MMO called Dawn Seekers that will be out in the first half of next year.
Cool, good. That's what we want. Will, who are you? What are you up to?
So I'm Will. I'm the product founder of Village Studio, where we make interoperable game avatars. And I've been making games for about 15 years, probably best known for a couple of things, which is I ran products on Angry Birds 2. I wrote a book on free-to-play that was reasonably popular. And before founding Village, I was running a game design and product management consultancy called Department of Play. And which actually, when we last spoke, I was still there and Village hadn't been announced. I was also told that we were wearing Christmas hats today.
You said, to be clear, Will, you said, we're wearing hats. And I think I said yes, but forgot it. But it's pleased to see that you committed. It's nice.
Yeah, I mean, everybody agreed. There was an agreement. And I feel like I'm trapped now. I've also been to B&M Bargains and bought some tinsel and stuff for the podcast.
But don't pretend that was for the podcast. That was already up.
It's really hot because it's quite a cheap hat.
The other thing is, do we actually end up, do you share the video of this? Is it all for nothing?
No, video, yeah, of course you have the video.
Okay,
I have to say, I think it shares a lot about our characteristics. Will was the one excitedly saying, let's all do it. David said yes and then didn't come up with it. But Will's still going.
And John never replied.
I was just non-committal. Okay, before we get on to good stuff, I should just say, as a disclaimer, I'm working with both you guys in a sort of minor capacity as well. So obviously, just bear that in mind. No investment advice, clearly. Okay, Will, how's 2022? How do you think that's been for sort of blockchain gaming?
That's shit, isn't it?
Good. Got that over and done with.
It went. I mean, it was a real roller coaster, right? Like, there was a time, you know, in the summer, early part of the year, where everything looked very exciting. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of things that didn't make sense, but money was getting kind of chucked into it, and you know, everybody was excited about it or angry about it or people talking about it, and then we had a little bit of a downturn generally in the markets, didn't we? And that had an impact. Mm-hmm. I guess the problem with crypto games is so kind of linked to coin prices in terms of like the hyper interest that everybody has in it. And you know, the collapse of Axie Infinity prices, which everyone sort of knew, if you're paying attention, was going to happen. It happened. Then we thought, you know, the next generation of play to earn. I say we as a collective, you know, thought this was going to get fixed. Didn't happen. Sort of Step End also similarly collapsed. And then the term Ponzinomics started to get banning around. Everybody started to lose a little bit of faith. I think this thing happened, didn't it, with an exchange? Which is, I don't know if any of you heard about this FTX and that kind of, that put a bit of a damper on the whole party. So it's been a real roller coaster.
It's funny because, like, we've all been making games for a while, at least John's been commenting on games for a while. And this idea, and people said to me when I started making Web3 games, oh, well, it's a bull market now, it's going to be a bear market again. That's not really ever been a thing in my career. Like, that hasn't really affected what I do day to day. And I found it odd that people are saying, well, it will be coming. Like, well, how about we don't? Why do we avoid it? Doesn't sound good. And then we're sort of trotting in for the first 3 or 4 months, whatever it was, of the year. And I go, oh, it seems fine. And then, like, overnight, it happened. And like, what's strange for me was like, I haven't changed what I do whatsoever. Like, the thing that I was doing last week is just as cool, for better and worse, as it is this week. And yet now everybody's like, ooh, yeah, not sure about this. And it's strange because I don't think of what we're doing as particularly linked to, I mean, we use blockchain for our games, but I don't really see us as having much to do with crypto. But you know, what becomes clear over the remaining part of the year is, oh, it turns out we are quite connected to this world. Yeah. And we're sort of bundled in through sentiment or investor interest or whatever it is. So I don't think it's, manifestly changed what we do day to day, but the vibe has definitely changed. And it's also odd that people say, oh, well, there'll be a bull market again. It's going to flip again.
So quickly it switches from, you know, is this the bottom of the capitulation yet? Or it's sort of, yeah, it's a very sort of weird comparison. I guess there weren't that many people making internet games back in sort of the year 2000, but I guess that you can understand there's a sort of similar sort of gearing sentiment to those sort of things. With crypto, it's obviously probably sort of 10x more on that in terms of the sentiment.
Yeah. Of it. And it is just, it is sentiment, right? And it's really interesting to see that compounding effect of sentiment where somebody gets nervous and that causes somebody else to get nervous. And I'm not there. I don't know exactly how it'll work, but that's how I saw it pan out, which was that a couple of people getting nervous that caused other people to. And then the next thing you know, everything's changed, despite the fact that nothing really has changed. Very odd.
Yeah, we started our fundraising at the beginning of this year.
We did.
And we announced in May, and then we went back out again in October, and just, it's such a stark difference.
Well, I'll share my screen. Keep going, Will.
We were in the middle of the fundraise when FTX collapsed and our lead pulled out. You know, it's been pretty significant. But one thing that's worth noting, I think, is that what's happened in crypto is it's sort of failed yet to prove a use case at scale beyond speculation.
Yes, from my point of view, I don't think that there's anything that's changed. Like, to me, so nothing has changed from the beginning of the year, which is like there's lots of interesting use cases for blockchain in games. We're still in that period where everyone is experimenting and nobody's got repeatable traction on ideas. But I think that, we're still in that experimental change where everything's possible, but currently nobody's making any money from it.
Mm-hmm. Just quickly go through my graph here, because I love my graph. So you can just see very clearly here that I would say, you know, until May, everything was sort of, I think, much as people would have expected until sort of May, June. And this is actually looking at the amount of sort of announced money going into sort of blockchain games and sort of metaverse, some NFT stuff as well. So you can just see between May, almost like, you know, $1.4 billion to June, $500 million. Yeah, it's just a very big sort of change that happens there. And early in the sector, when people are trying to, you know, raise investment, that's clearly, you know, that's a sort of a sentiment change happened really because Luna and Terra were the first things to go down, then the various other sort of crypto financial companies went down, and then sort of FTX is sort of at the end of that in November. But that's a pretty sort of clear secondary factor in terms of, you know, what was happening in the sector and how enthusiastic people were at sort of raising money, high valuations.
And I suppose it's worth saying that because by and large blockchain games aren't making money right now, then you're relying on investor money to run the to pay for the companies to be run month on month, and so that does have an effect. If investors cool on this sector, then the ability to continue to pay salaries is put in doubt. So ordinarily, just because VCs get excited about a category and then stop being excited isn't a big deal. Fine, we'll just keep on trucking if you're making mobile games. But if you're relying on that to actually run the business, then that's has a bigger effect, right?
And I think it's definitely the case this year. Being involved sort of professionally in the VC sort of sector is you saw people raising sort of money at very high valuations. But you sort of knew within 6 months they were going to have to sort of go back into the market because they didn't have enough money to sort of fulfill what they wanted. So they were sort of doing this bit now, but if they didn't get any more money, you just sort of knew there wasn't a game there, because some of these were sort of quite high, you know, high concept games that would cost $10 million to make. So I think there was the sentiment in the market was sort of drawing people to sort of propose very ambitious projects that were going to take, you know, multiple years and maybe tens of millions of dollars to create. And maybe in the long term, that's not a bad thing that those projects sort of don't exist anymore, because, you know, you can't just assume investors are going to keep ponying up because the market sentiment's going to be there. So,
well, and you know, the flip side of this, and it sounds like I'm just trying to make myself feel better, but so much noise has gone away. Like, there was so much noise around token raises and issuing tokens, land sales, NFTs, yeah. Let's get a mint done, all this stuff, which to me wasn't very interesting in terms of how it evolves the games industry. It's just a money thing or like a speculative thing. And nobody's bothering to do that because it doesn't make money anymore, at least not significant sums. So it's really back to, all right, what can we build that's cool and different? And I prefer that world than everyone getting just a bit too frothy about trying to make money from nothing.
Yeah, I think also we kind of hopefully the sort of the discords for the degens kind of fuck off as well, right? Like we have actual players that are interested in what we're building and not just here to get an early asset, get whitelist and flip it. That doesn't it's not a game, right? It's not, you know, it's not a sustainable business
model. But it is a game. It's a different sort of game.
I mean, it's not a sustainable business model, right? Like it's not maybe it is fun for some people, but it's not fun in the context of you know, what we would traditionally call a game. Like, I guess there are certain games in the history of games that have had a sort of speculative financial element to them. Magic the Gathering being one. I mean, non-intentionally, lots of MMOs have had this as well. But they've been back to, you know, the core. Those are kind of like solid, fun interaction. And that's what's been missing, right? There's actually someone willing to come out net negative rather than it all be a promise of... you buy this now because someone else will pay more for it later.
Well, yeah. So I think it changes the audience, but if you think, but it also changes what the people building games are doing. So let's imagine that there's 10,000 people building games in this category. At the beginning of the year, maybe half of them were focusing on things that just make money out of nothing, like do an NFT, mint an NFT. There's no point in them doing that for the foreseeable, as far as I can tell, in which case you would expect those same 10,000 people to be instead focusing on, what can we build that's new and cool and doesn't rely on token price going up? So hopefully more interesting things are getting built. So certainly we think we're building something interesting that isn't related to or reliant on the token going up.
Now, I guess it's interesting. Well, I guess the question would be whether the people who were building those sort of, not just in games, but I guess we saw it a lot in guilds, whether people who were building what seemed like a very obvious, let's sort of create a company with some sort of business model and stick a token on it, whether they had the ability to then think, that's not worked, what can I do now? I think probably the very best of them probably do have that, but I think the majority of them sort of just struggle because they weren't really thinking very deeply about what they were doing. They were just like, oh, we can do this, you know. So I think sort of by definition, those people, I mean, they don't have to go away, but those projects, you know, it's sort of healthy for them to go away, and maybe those people can be sort of redeployed in better projects. But I mean, it's something I think you've both raised. So maybe let's go a bit sort of deeper from what happened this year. But more generally, and it was, we were just discussing before we came on, that GamesIndustry.biz has sort of restated its view that blockchain games are terrible sort of things. And one of the things in there is, you know, we haven't seen any sort of use cases for why blockchain makes games better. So I guess maybe that's a sort of fundamental thing. But, you know, what do we actually think there? So it's all this froth going on, and it's gone down, and it's probably going to go up again. But what do we actually think that, you know, this blockchain technology, what does it actually do for games that we can't do without it? Which I guess is the sort of the main use case sort of point.
Yeah, do you want to go first, Will?
No, you can say that, David.
All right, well.
That poison chalice.
No, it's not poison. This is what I think and talk about every day, right? And if you can't do something interesting and new in it, then let's do something else. So I wouldn't be here doing what I'm doing if I didn't think that there's something genuinely interesting that isn't just about tokens going up. So, I mean, I think the first obvious use case is I still think it's cool for players to own the things that they have in game and are free to buy and sell them as they wish and conceivably make some money on it. But, you know, I don't think that should be the thrust of it, but I think it's nice in the same way as if I own a bike and then sell it later, then I can see some of the money come back. Why not my digital item? So I think that that's a good use case, but it's also pretty obvious. Interoperability, I'm going to let Will talk about, because that's more what you're doing than what we're doing. But what we're doing is this concept of building games that are on-chain. And this is, to be clear, it's putting the game logic, the game state, the game assets, everything on chain. So it's not, there isn't any centralized component. There isn't a AWS, Google Cloud type affair. And that's technically difficult and some challenges in doing that. But what a couple of things that it enables that we think is interesting. One is that that game lives forever for as long as Ethereum lives, which is a cool idea. And it's immutable. So once we throw away the keys, then the game that we set in play remains as is and lives forever. which is an interesting concept about decentralization. Another one is this this concept of composability, where we create this game world, but we allow, encourage builders to create more of the game that connects to our base level game. So expands out what the game can be over time, not in the same way as Roblox does, that says, hey, these are, you know, we'll create, help you create the content, and if there's money to be made, then we make most of it, please, and you need to use these tools, and quite restrictive. Instead, we're saying, no, let community, you can decide how this game expands beyond this point, and you don't have to ask us, and if you feel you can make money out of it, then make money out of it. And I don't think there's been a game like that in the world before, and I think that building on chain allows people to makes that possible. It's hard, and you know, the next game that we release won't be the ultimate version of that, but it is possible, and this opens the door to some new gameplay ideas that I think is super cool. That's my on-chain game pitch. But to us, that's super, super interesting, and I enjoy spending my working day figuring that stuff out. Sorry, Will, I interjected.
No, that's really, really good. I think that the for me, things are really muddy in terms of like the benefits, and to be perfectly honest with you. I have a vision of what the future is, which is that we get to a point, maybe it's sort of 10 years from now, where maybe we call this a metaverse, maybe it's not. I don't believe in metaverses where you put on Meta headset and you know, you're in Mark Zuckerberg's metaverse and it's all centrally contained. I see the metaverse as being this kind of like, very much in the same way that the internet or IBM compatible PCs have grown and developed, which are these kind of loose protocols or standards and software layers which sit upon each other, which create this thing which is kind of sort of organic, right? And so this is exactly the way that IBM compatible PCs have developed. It's the same way that the internet's developed, whether, you know, there's maybe a central standard, but these things have been expanded and they grow. And what hasn't happened with games is games are sort of sat very much like all of these games behind me as silos. They're individual things and entities, and maybe, you know, if you go on PlayStation, you'll have your PlayStation friends and you can play different games with them, but really they don't interact in any way, and they don't build on top of each other. They don't share parts and components. And so I see this future of sort of, maybe it's games, maybe it's experiences, which is, you know, maybe some people talk about as the metaverse, as being these layers where the data is shared between each of these games. And there's a sort of standardization where I can take my friendship group, I can take me, my avatar, my character, into this experience, and then it may have a payment system which is attached to it. It may have certain assets that I can bring with it. I might be able to bring my car into this experience, and it be interpreted by that particular game and take it into another game. So this kind of like interoperability aspect, that when we get to this point, and the thing that gets me really excited as a game designer, it's like, what does happen when the walls or the sort of boxes of these games, and in my mind, the boxes of these games sort of break down and they start to like meld. What happens with that? Like, how does that work? Where does it go? That's the thing I'm really interested in. And I'm also interested in the breakdown between the kind of another barrier that we see traditionally in games, which is player, developer, and investor, right? And that's kind of like you are one of those things. You are the player of the game, you're the developer of the game, you're the investor of the game. I think that what we can do through tokenomics, and people said to me, tokenomics is dead. And I think what they mean by tokenomics is dead is they mean that like the sort of Ponzi schemes of here's a token and it's designed to increase in value is died. But when I think about what a tokenomics is, it's about aligning these motivations. So how do you make a player want to, if they have the ability to invest or to develop the game, how can they expand upon it? How can they build upon those building blocks? How can they introduce a kind of like a map system or a quest system that integrates into your game? How can they swap tokens? How can they invest in tokens which help you to build the game or allow other developers to build the game? Like, these kind of breakdowns of the roles are really interesting to me as well. Like, how does that happen? How does that function? How does that work? And I think what we've seen in the last year is, as David has said, and I think this is really articulate, is that like noise, it's just noise in this space, right? There's noise of people are like holding up a banner saying come and buy this thing and it's going to be worth more tomorrow, come and do this thing and you know, you're going to get yield on your tokens, you're going to stake these tokens, it's going to be worth more, and those are all speculation vehicles, right? And like, so there's one aspect of that's been fulfilled, but then the other aspects are the more interesting things of like, what are the projects that people care about? What are the utility? And so for us to get from where we're sat now in 2023 to that future where we have this kind of autonomous game-like experience, which is multiple different systems and entities all working together through, you know, shared aligned motivations, we need to solve a bunch of things, which one, we need to align motivations, and us at Village, we don't see ourselves as being a tech company. We're not solving tech problems. We're solving human motivation problems. We're designing and building things where these groups come together and they participate in this, this ecosystem. And then the sort of usability of it. And like right now, the blockchain is a problem in that you need a private key and you need to be custodial of that. And if you lose it, or if, you know, you get scammed, or if somebody, does something nefarious with your funds, it's lost, right? There's no arbitration, it's gone, it's on you. It's kind of, that's a problem. And then they're slow and they're expensive, right? If you want to transact on Ethereum, you're going to have to pay a gas fee. And so there's all of these barriers for people to get this sort of, this promised land, right? And even if when you're there, like, why do you care about it? So we see our role at Village, and what I get really excited about is like trying to make all of that function. Like, how do we get to a point and offer a service which enables this metaverse like experience of these different games? And how do we make it so that people care about it? How do we make it so it's easy, so you've got a single sign on? How do we solve the sort of customer service aspect of it? That's the dream and the vision, right? And I think it's all got lost in the noise in the last year. I think that this kind of like utopia that we all had for blockchain.
A friend of mine, Nico, when asked what does blockchain add to games, his response is it might well be the case that it adds nothing to the games that you already know. But it enables games that we have no frame of reference for yet. It enables a new kind of game that's hard to describe because it doesn't exist right now. Yeah. But actually, Mario will always be Mario. Doesn't really need an NFT inside it. So I think that, and of course, it's a bit of a non-answer, isn't it, to say, oh, things you can't imagine are going to be made. But I find when I'm building and talking to the designers here, these are new ideas, and to me, it feels like a different kind of experience. And so it may well be that there's just something that will exist in 5 years' time that we don't imagine today. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And certainly it's a fun, interesting piece of work to try and figure out what conceivably could that be. It could be Will's idea of a way of connecting things up in a shared experience like the metaverse, or it could be, you know, my concept of composability where we allow to encourage the community to build the game together. So I don't know, or something completely different, of course.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's interesting that I think both your answers there, you're sort of, you know, and particularly what you said there, David, is, you know, the advantage of what we can do now is you know, it's stuff that we don't know because we haven't seen it before. I mean, that's sort of the, and both of you, I think, are trying to basically come up with what we can think of sort of primitive sort of assets that are sort of going to be created in a context that they're going to have some sort of usability there and then, but the point is they can be used, you know, generally around there. So in a sense, what we're sort of thinking, and maybe that's what the metaverse is, you know, maybe at the moment we're thinking too much as blockchain games as in sort of historic traditional games where there's a very sort of fixed idea of what there's assets and what you do with them, and actually it doesn't make any sense really to have those as NFTs and have tokens within them. Actually, what we should be thinking much more is there's going to be a whole bunch of these sort of assets that work in some ways in some games, but the actual interesting bit will be people using them like Lego bits across, you know, holes, you know, swathes of sort of messiness. I'm not describing it very well, but I think I've been interested this year really that, you know, these sort of on-chain games like you've been describing, David, that, you know, everything happens is on-chain. Those are super hard to do, but those seem to be the purest sort of experience of what enabling a blockchain in a game experience can actually do, because that's really not happened before, because no one would build sort of games that primitive unless they had to, because they're using a blockchain, because you're losing so much fidelity or so much of what we expect to have in a game experience.
Yep.
You know, and I think that's a little bit with some of the criticism of these experiences, because they are so different from the games we've sort of had before that people who even look at them just go, well, that's What's the fun in that?
Yeah, I also think about the fact that the times by which where the industry has grown, and I'm doing it for a while, so I remember that it's always additive. So it was 8-bit computers, and now there's consoles. They felt like different markets. It just added on. I'm sure you probably see a graph. And imagine there's a new kind of game that necessarily is different enough to appeal to a different kind of player. Otherwise, they would already be playing games. So if you imagine that this new category is additive to the games industry, and usually they are, then you would expect it to be and feel different to attract somebody that hasn't been interested in playing games before. And sometimes I think that's a subtle thing. Like I'm thinking about the fact that Candy Crush was an enormous mobile hit, of course, but Duel came before it. Yep. And you can say that at a game mechanic level, they're fairly similar, but they certainly one was a great deal more popular than the other, a lot more successful. So there may be things that aren't about game mechanics and more about somehow the way the game is configured or works with the community or something else. So it might not be game mechanics, could be something different that's a little less clear at the moment.
Yeah. It is interesting, yeah, the additive thing. So with your own projects aside, is there anything sort of, are there any projects out there that you think are sort of interesting? You know, maybe they're not those sort of like hardcore on-chain games. Because the other thing I do think that people are don't really realise is quite how many teams are building stuff. And even if the majority of those teams are not quite sure what they're doing or copying other stuff, there is, I would say, you know, probably about 100 teams that are sort of experienced in making games of some form and are doing something that is, you know, to me seems like interesting, or the ability to sort of attract communities or already have attracted communities. So is there anything that sort of really stands out for you looking maybe more towards sort of next year? Because I think, you know, looking back to sort of Free Play Mobile, it was one of these things that, you know, was a technology that was there for a long time, but it needed like sort of Candy Crush and Puzzle and Dragons or something like that to be that sort of like, oh, this is what these games are like, and then it becomes sort of acceptable. Maybe Blockchain is different because we're sort of talking about making on a more fundamental level than just sort of like, oh, here's Candy, here's Clash of Clans, so I'll make another strategy game. But is there anything that sort of stands out for you?
I'll do a couple. One is, first of all, I'd say I can't point to a game that I'd rush and tell all my gamer friends, hey, you got to check this out. It's amazing, works really well. It's like something you've never seen before. I can't name that game. This year, truthfully, and it's hard to predict where that comes from. I'm very interested in what Gabe Bladen's going to do with DigiDaigaku, just because he's a smart, interesting guy that's had success before, and he's certainly ploughing a lot of time, energy, money into his new endeavour.
Can you, for people who don't know, how would you explain that?
Oh, well, <that's...
laughs> as it is, David.
Oh shit! Actually, Will, I think Will's keen to answer that one. Well, I think it's a. As best I know, there hasn't been a lot of description on the game. It's more about launching a set of NFTs that are free to own, or at least a small set of them are free to own, and then it's going to get you this idea. It allows you to create a machine that creates NFTs in and of itself, and certainly going off in a weird direction. But as for what the actual game, maybe it is the game. But
no.
I don't think there's been a lot of talk about what the actual game is. You're probably better placed to answer that than me, John.
That's sort of interesting in the sense that, you know, I don't know, you know, I assume there will be some sort of more game thing going on, but it almost, you know, it would be impossible to do what they've done with that project in terms of the game theory of, you know, giving these assets out and then what you can do with them, which is sort of very limited in terms of, you know, there's a few decisions you can make, but in terms of sort of people owning assets that then they can do various things with that maybe give them then access to other sort of experiences, other games that nothing to do with the sort of core game. And I guess certainly, you know, creating a community around that, which is, you know, I guess to a degree based around sort of price mechanic. Because I do think that is sort of part of blockchain assets, but it's not, I think, the overwhelming part of what he's trying to do. I don't know. I mean, I think the fact of struggling to sort of explain what it is actually shows maybe this is sort of one of those examples of this is what blockchain, you know, is adding to a gaming experience, which is not about, you know, running around shooting people or driving cars or whatever the things we've been used to.
That project right now is just pure speculation, right? It's speculation on, hey, if you buy these NFTs and hold them,
I don't think so.
They will be worth some, they'll have some future utility, and they will be worth more Like, that's effectively what's going on. And like, Game of War is one of my all-time favorite games. You know, Gabe's previous company, Machine Zone. But it, effectively, the money was the game, right? And maybe this is perfect NFT. Maybe it's a perfect blockchain project. I want to come back to something which is maybe a bit of a tangent here, which is about what we've been talking about, which is blockchain games. I know this is the name of the podcast. I think, to my mind, getting kind of hung up on the blockchain aspect of it is maybe a little bit narrow right now. Mm-hmm. And the way that, that we see where we're operating, the space that we're operating in at Village, is not that we're a blockchain company, but or that we're a Web3 company. And that has a sort of, there's a slight connotation to that, in that some of the technologies that we use might not be backed by a blockchain, but they're still within these ideologies. And really, we think about Web3, I think about Web3 as being a set of ideologies rather than it being a set of technologies. And I think it's kind of super easy to get kind of like focused on the kind of like the how rather than the what's or the whys, right? And so for me, that this sort of like, this aspect of decentralization of ownership is the thing that's kind of is key to it. And you know, there's lots of interesting projects like SolidPods and IPFS, like these, which aren't necessarily related to the blockchain, but still feel to me they're in that world of Web3. Mm-hmm. And so my mind's starting to go there and wonder about those aspects, because I think there's still some like core challenges that we face with the usability of blockchains as they stand currently.
I've got another one to add. I'm a big fan of what the Lattice team are doing with their MUD engine. So this is an on-chain game engine, and they've also done a good job of encouraging the community around it to build interesting projects with it. Mm-hmm. I find that Justin Gleibert, who runs that company, is interesting, inspiring. It's like he's from the future. He's just got some ideas that are ahead of other people. And I certainly think that's a company that's doing interesting things in the space, right on the edge of Web3 games. So that would be my other, one to watch.
You're really down the fully on chain rabbit hole there, aren't you, Dave?
Well, I mean, I think it's I think this is one of the things we've seen over this year. A lot of things that people were excited about last year have not gone the distance, right? And this happened in free to play as well. You remember, you used to have a light and a paid version or whatever it was, and it turned out no, it's not what people want, you know. And so it's okay. I think we're still in that period where people are trying things out, and some things are working, some things aren't. To me, one of the more interesting things, something that's gone from being a weird part of the Web3 games world, is on chain, to something that is going the distance and is more interesting now than it was in the beginning of the year, whereas other things have started off more interesting, got less interesting, if you see what I mean. So, it's also where we're positioned our business, so it's what I think about day to day. But I would say that it's just one of the more interesting areas of the Web3 games space.
Yeah, I think it's... I can imagine this sort of, you know, whether we need mass market or not is probably another podcast, but you know, you can imagine if you can build even a very sort of niche sort of community around a fully on-chain game and those assets, then that's a place to build up of, you know. And you can, if that community scales and as you could, you know, build those experiences, then you can imagine that sort of scaling up. I think the problem is, in most cases, everyone sort of imagines that they are going to take an existing web game and a web 2 game and sort of add NFTs in there or existing community and somehow create a game that magically sort of has this sort of millions of users straight away, which is sort of how games have been made before, because that's what the whole app store, which we'll come on to, that's what the app store over the last 10 years has built us. They've built us an ability for 3 billion people to download a game overnight, sort of thing. So scale has always been sort of what we've been built up on. But I think, you know, from what Will sort of said a little bit about usability and wallets and all that sort of stuff, is we can't really expect that from blockchain, unless it is an Axie Infinity sort of situation where everyone's going to work out how to use a wallet if they can make $10 a day or whatever, aren't they? So scale is wrong. Scale is the thing we should not be asking for at the moment, because that's sort of going to attract the wrong audience and maybe the wrong experiences. But.
Could you expand a bit on that, John? Sorry, that seeking scale is going to attract the wrong audience.
Well, I think if the thing that you do is we're gonna you know, you often see this, bringing the next billion people to Web3, maybe not in games, but you know, within sort of Web3 sort of apps and stuff. And I think there has been this idea that in order for the idea or the concept to be successful, then loads of people have to be using it. So, you know, and clearly, I guess from a investor point of view, or in many cases, if you're you want a lot of people to be using your product, that's sort of the view of success. But part of the thing about blockchain is I think it allows sort of what we could call niche experiences to be financially successful in a way that you couldn't do, in the legacy sort of world, because you can't monetize those people enough. But if you have ownership around some assets and people are really committed to the experience, then they're not, well, obviously they cannot always trade out. They're very keen on not to trade out, maybe not for financial reasons, but because they really feel really committed to that community, and those assets are giving them access to special experiences or something like that. Or there are just some things, I wouldn't play too much on this, but you sometimes see people on crypto Twitter saying, this is my never sell NFT or something, which, you can't know if that's true or not. But there are things that we get really attached to that are valued beyond money in some cases.
Yeah, and I think somebody described it to me as Web2 is a consumption mindset. You're just spending money, it's gone as soon as you spent it. There's no concept of you. Now, I've never bought a Ferrari, but from what I know of that world, if you buy a Ferrari, you go, well, I'm investing money because I know that I can sell it at some point. Yeah, and I'm proud to be members of the Ferrari club in the meantime, but and show that I've got this fancy car. So I don't know if I should liken the two, but the point is this, when you spend money on things, you can either have an investment mindset where, sure, I'm buying this, but I'll be able to sell it again at some point if I want to, or consumption mindset, which is, hey, I'm just spending money, putting 10 cents in a slot in order to entertain myself.
And I do think in the long term, and I think we are seeing some games moving towards this. So Illuvium's just released its sort of pre-alpha for one of its sort of experiences. And, those assets, those creatures you're collecting, they're not selling those as NFTs as a primary sale. So those are all going to be collected by players playing the game. I think the same thing for Big Time as well, that those sort of... they're just cosmetics, but those you can go to the marketplace now and buy them, but they've all basically been not found, but sort of loot dropped by people going out and attacking bosses and getting these things back again. And I think that's I'm not saying that's the only way to do it, but that seems like a definite way of sort of building community around, particularly if those assets are not terribly valuable. I guess it sort of works out better, but the fact that people are playing the game and enjoying it, and they get these things that they may be valuable that they want to keep, or there may be ways crafting games clearly going to sort of play into that sort of thing as well. But that sort of seems to be a more organic and a more holistic way than buy our token now on an IDO and try and get into buy the NFTs now when there's no experience around it. So I think clearly to me that's a sort of a trend that's going to be happening in 2023.
So the assumption here, John and Dave, so I understand it, is that blockchain's hard, right? It's hard to transact on it. It's hard to get into it. It's hard to gain access to those assets. So therefore, those that will endure the pain to get there will be the ones that are willing to invest and speculate again. Right? I mean, I guess it's kind of like, is this coming back to the original point which I made earlier, which is that the only use case is speculation, which is, even if it's speculation based on the fact that, hey, I'm going to own a Ferrari because I know I can sell it later down the line, right? That's a kind of a form of speculation. It's not a utility. I guess, do we think that the technology can improve to such a point where there's an ease of on-ramp allows for people to have these experiences, and the benefits of whatever we decide the benefits are of blockchain, the utility of it, can be enjoyed by a broader audience? Or do we think it actually just always will remain a niche because of the technological hurdles?
There's so much money being invested in infrastructure to help onboard people from Web2 to Web3 around wallets and gas and all of those things, and they're horrific and really are only tolerated by people that are really into it or just see it as a investment opportunity, speculation. But I think that there's tons and tons of effort in trying to make that more approachable for a wider market.
No, absolutely. I mean, I would say even now you can basically sign on through plenty of those games with just an email and a password. I mean, whether I think that's sort of the best way to do it is neither here nor there. I mean, you can do it. I guess again. We all worked in sort of free-to-play mobile, and I sometimes hesitate to draw too many analogies, but you just sort of see over the last sort of 10 years how, just sort of until Apple sort of blew it all up, how sort of smoothly the underlying ecosystem and the underlying technology allowed game, you know, mobile game developers to basically address a, you know, an audience of billions of people. And I just kind of think, you know, the one thing that has sort of become clear over, you know, the last, certainly last year, but over the last few years, is just how many orthogonal layers of difficulty blockchain sort of comes with in terms of the product design, in terms of how you get people in there, and and in terms of, you know, comparing it to, you know, the App Store now, where you can just download anything and immediately pay, you know, $100. You know, I mean, that didn't happen at the beginning, you know, and even when it did happen, there was still the mentality. You know, I remember when I first started playing free-to-play mobile games, you know, to spend $1 in a game was just like really weird. What would I do that for? You know, and over time, you know, that sort of changes in terms of the education. There's one thing I did want to actually bring up, I mentioned before. There's been sort of quite a lot of discussion about sort of Apple and allowing NFTs and all that sort of stuff. I mean, is that just something that we love to talk about and we think it's important because it's Apple? Do we think that will have any impact in 2023?
Or will it have an impact, just, or will it change?
Well, will it change anything in terms of, we've been now talking a bit about sort of niche audiences versus mass market audience. So, you know, if for all the whatever Apple actually means by its terminology, the fact that you can now buy NFTs in an app using Apple Pay, whatever, using in-app purchases, you know, is that going to change anything, or is that actually a bit of a red herring?
You sort of can, but it kind of like, it's down to Apple to decide whether or not they want you to. There's like the guidelines are so vague, right? What does utility mean in an NFT? What about if it's not a fungible token? What if, you know, there's so many what's if in that kind of like vague language that they put out to the addition to the guidelines. And it basically, it's an Apple's get out of jail free card, right? Like, if we don't like you and you're selling NFTs, you're in, you know, we're going to kill your business. And I think there's such a high risk that Apple will have a freak out and kill your business. I think it's really dangerous to be investing in that as a platform right now. So I think there's sort of like a secondary thought to that, which is that mobile has become so important as a platform. It's so important to so many people's day-to-day lives. Apple shouldn't have so much control over what does and doesn't end up on someone's phone. Like, there has to be a change in thinking. And I was always very much in favor of Apple taking their 30% cut, having their walled garden, because it benefited us when we were in free to play, coming from those days of sort of operator decks and having to get, you know, to have to deal with just incredibly high fees and the difficulty of getting it and not getting promoted. And then all of a sudden Apple come along and say, we'll take your games, we'll take 30%, but we'll also promote them, and, you know, we'll give you that help up. And it felt like they earned that 30%. But there's a point now where these things are so important that they just can't have that level of control. They can't have that level of control over other people's businesses,
but,
other people's lives and data.
But they do.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I agree with you, Will, but that you can't, but they do. And how do you get that to change? And I think that I don't see them changing that unless their hand is forced.
I think the hand will be forced is the underlying. Okay. They can't is but, that but someone it, will stop I, them from doing it.
I think it has to. I think Web3 generally needs to get bigger to the point where Apple's anti Web3 stance becomes so at odds with what the consumers want or is fair in business, that it gets to a point you go, hang on, we need to talk about this. It's not what your customers want. This isn't fair from a business point of view. We need to change some laws about this. But all the time, it's a sort of fringe interest to investors rather than an absolute mass market thing. Then maybe it's a little harder to push that through. I mean, Epic haven't succeeded so far. And they're big, so it would have to be bigger than Fortnite in order to force their hand. Or maybe it just needs to be time, or I don't know how these things work. But to me, it feels like Apple isn't going to volunteer that, and Google won't either. What do you think, John?
I mean, the one thing I think, you know, clearly Google is more open as Alphabet, I suppose, as a company. Yeah, they are, various bits of that business are, you know, they're now hosting blockchains and doing validation on certain things. Whether that means the Google Play Store is going to be open to that sort of stuff, you know, I don't quite know how that works. But clearly, if Apple, I think I totally agree with you guys that, you know, Apple, it's not, nothing's going to happen until Apple have their hand forced, and that's not going to happen sort of next year. So does that provide Google an opportunity to say, right, you know, we welcome sort of everyone, which is sort of the default option at the moment. You know, the Web3 stuff is more on Google than on the App Store. I think even if they did allow that sort of stuff, I think going back to what we sort of said before, it's a bit about sort of the audience education. Is sort of maybe not the bigger point, but a sort of similar size point of whether you can actually distribute these games through an app store.
Mm-hmm.
People want to have to download them. And...
Yeah, there's an incredible level of like inconsistency, right, in Apple's policies in terms of what they do and don't allow.
But that's always been the case, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I think that this is kind of increasingly problematic in that you can download Coinbase and put in your credit card details and buy some Ethereum. But hey, if you want to buy, then use that Ethereum to buy an NFT in the game, no.
Or even buy an NFT in Coinbase wallet and transfer it. That was
the last one. Really? So, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that they will kind of like they're almost like eating themselves, right? In that there are going to be these exceptions, and there's going to be a point at which I'm sure legally there's going to be some sort of like, I'm not a legal expert, but like some sort of antitrust case or something, which is like, hold on, right, what's going on here? This is you know this sort of, it's monopolistic aspect, and these deals and inconsistencies, it's, you know, it's not a fair business practice. Something will kick in, I'm sure, that will force the hand in certain regions. It's already starting to happen, right? We're already starting to see in some regions. I think that they will be forced to have a much more open policy. I think it might take a decade, but I think it will happen. But for now, it's just such danger to sort of participate in the App Store.
And I think your point about your second point there, John, about we've got an education piece, is nobody's going to sit down and be educated, right? Like, time to learn. But you've got to create something that doesn't exist, that people really want to do, that they're forced to learn about it. And a year ago, that might have been, hey, if you put $10 in, it could turn it into $100. All right, tell me what I need to know. Yeah. But I think if that's not there, then it has to be something different. If it's a game, then it has to be a different kind of game experience. Like, hey, this is amazing, trust me, you got to play it, but you do have to figure this stuff out and build a wallet, whatever it is. So but at the moment, still, there's not games that you can point to that say there was last year with Axie, but now there's not. So we're still waiting for those games to come through.
I think when we last had the podcast, we talked about Axie being the Farmville moment. And we said that there would be two or three more. My prediction, I think, was, I can't remember, it was my prediction, would be two or three more games like it. So we had Step N, right, which was something, and went the same way of Axie, but it's not happened, right? It's all kind of...
I would say the one thing, I've always been pretty bullish on Axie because I've known them for a long time, and despite the sort of the trajectory that game had last year, the token price is now down, let's have a look. 95% from all-time high. You know, they have enough money to sort of continue for like 10 years. I mean, it's just the argument whether they get back to that height again, I suppose, you know, we'll wait and see. But they are building sort of very solidly in terms of that basic game. The land stuff's coming. They're doing, people are building sort of mini games using the Axie things. There's a whole bunch of other stuff sort of coming there. So I guess it is sort of interesting. And I guess this is, you know, the one thing that if you weren't a blockchain games company, that sort of trajectory would have sort of killed you dead. And I think maybe sort of, you know, flipping the argument we've been having that, you know, players can have ownership of their sort of assets that live forever. I mean, sometimes, yeah, there's sort of similar thing with the companies now get chances. If you've basically created a token and created some NFTs out of, just made them, and the value was much higher, but now it's much lower, but it still has sort of value, then that's sort of, again, an interesting model from a business point of view, that those, you know, actually doesn't have to go to any VCs and raise money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether they, and I guess for them, it's sort of slightly frustrating that they spent a lot of time building what they think is much better quality stuff now than it was a year ago. And everyone sort of uses them as a sort of like, well, they're a sort of failure. They're, you know, whatever sort of terminology is used about them. But
I guess also one of the things that was interesting that did happen this year was that Sky Mavis became the first games company ever to be attacked by a nuclear rogue state. To my knowledge.
To your knowledge, yeah, exactly.
Speech not a bug, I don't know. Yeah.
I'm gonna call that one a bug, John. I think that's really stretching your bug. Is it a bug or a feature definition? I think if you lose $600 million, I think most people would say that was a bug.
Yeah. Although I did write a comment at the time that if you can survive that, then basically, you know, you are a cockroach, can't you? I mean, the interesting thing was if that had happened like now, when everyone was sentiment was down due to FTX, could they have survived it now? Mm-hmm. Probably.
They did raise money, right, to be able to refund the bridge.
Yeah, they've not actually covered the whole loss. So they covered sort of a whole bunch of the loss, but some of it was from their treasury, which they sort of kicked down the road a little bit. So. I guess we'll see what happens.
Well, by the way, that's not to yeah. such an important. I don't think, you know. I think Sky Mavis also filled with wonderful people, and that they have a sort of like they do have a long road ahead, right? They've got money in the bank, or they did have money in the bank. I'm assuming they've still got some, if it's 10 years or whatever it is, and it will stick around. But the question is more like everybody thought there was going to be more of that. It felt like okay, this is the beginning of a tidal wave, and it's not happened, right? No. But that's more the point that to be made, which is that. Okay, this thing we thought was working out doesn't work out. Well, what at least has to change?
At least it's good that I suppose you were saying those sort of speculative boom and busts can only happen a few times and then everyone gets, you know, those things can't scale to millions of users and then go bust and then keep happening. You know, people do learn. I was going to say, just to finish off, maybe, I don't know if we've been too negative, I don't know. I mean, let's be negative. This is the year it's been. You know, What is our sentiment moving into what's going to happen in 2023? Are we still, you know, a bit battered, but still sort of positive in what's going to happen and this stuff?
I'm positive about it. I frame it as like it's an ugly. You know, this year has been tougher, but it's just got rid of the noise and the speculation. And to me, the speculation part wasn't all that interesting. I mean, if all we can do with blockchain in games is add a speculation element, then shoot me now. I don't want to be this part of the industry. To me, there's much more interesting things you can do. And now the people that were spending all their time and energy and making a lot of noise about it aren't doing that, as best I know. And so now it leaves the room for people to do genuinely interesting and new things with it. So I think I'm looking forward to next year seeing what those things are and hearing less about tokens going up.
Yeah, I fully agree with David on that. Absolutely. I think there's like there's a cohort of companies like mine and David's within the UK that we know, right, that are doing interesting stuff, right? They're not doing this kind of Ponzi-nomics. And so what happens? Like, I know some of those companies, speaking to them regularly, some of them are like, this is all bullshit, right? Some of them genuinely are like, you know, this is all—it's all nonsense. There is only speculation, and you know, we'll make games for a few years, and we'll try to make some good games, and we'll see what happens. But they're not sort of, you know, dyed-in-the-wool true believers of sort of Web3. And I think that level of skepticism is healthy. Yeah. I think, you know, like I probably have come across quite negative, but I still believe in that future that we have, which I talked about 10 years down the line that we're going to get to little by little, which is that the borders break down and. Yeah. That we have this kind of like hard to describe nebulous thing. It's like maybe, you know, trying to describe the internet to someone in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. No, I think absolutely. I mean, I think probably it's one of those things that being in the moment is sort of slightly harder to sort of work out your feelings because I think all of us have this sort of got into the space because we do think there's something very valuable and interesting and sort of novel about it. But obviously talking for myself, you get a little bit caught up in the value of this is sort of wow. Of course we're right because everyone's making tons of money. And then whether it's just assets that you're owning that you're not, you know, spending or anything, the value of those goes down 70%. Then obviously that's going to have a sort of human impact.
Yeah, you see, you describe a world that you and I are in the same world, but different parts of it. That's just like I don't. That's not a part of the Web3 game space that I've been particularly involved with, buying NFTs and seeing if they go up and down and looking at this token price. I know that you're covering the whole of the market, so you're bound to look at it, and certainly some interesting things happen. But I'm just using it as a piece of technology to build a new kind of video game.
Yeah. I was going to try to think of what term to use you there, David. Very, you're an outlier in the space, I think. But even, I mean, I'm not trading stuff, but even there, it's sort of, you know...
I own a few coins, never owned an NFT, never bought an NFT, you know, particularly like a profile picture.
You're there... no NFT-er.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know the phrase. But I do kind of think, you know, you know, having thought about what's happened in the sort of last month or so, you know, I think it is good to, you know, for people to think, and maybe some people think this isn't the space I thought it was. Let's not be in there anymore. But equally, I think it's good to take a step back and go, well, actually, why are we in it? And if we are going to continue in it, then let's not get so wound up by the prices and stuff. Although I'm sure, humanly speaking, that will happen at some point in the future.
Another good thing that happened this year, sorry, John, no, you're trying to conclude, is that kind of two related things. One of which is that proof of work went away.
Yes,
That's a good point.
Yeah. Which is a really good thing. Yeah. And then the sort of associated to that, the sort of arguments from the naysayers in the games industry. There's a lot less kind of like hectoring and kind of like baying. There was that article by Forbes, right, which is like how gamers beat NFTs, and they think it's gone away, which is great. It's so nice, you know, there's a bit of peace and quiet. You can just kind of get on with what you're doing without someone on your back kind of, you know, parroting
on. That's a good positive. That's a judo flip, isn't it? Sort of.
Yeah, we're going to fuck it all up and then you guys be quiet.
Good. Okay, well, I hope you all made sense of that. Thank you very much to David and Will for coming back for a second time. I've enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so perfect.
Thanks. So I can get the big guys in.
Yeah. Are we going to crack open the eggnog now, I think?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, good. That's right.
Remind people of your projects and where they can find you.
Oh, Twitter and such. Yeah. Twitter is Damor, Damor _ETH is my Twitter, of course. Good. And that's probably the best place.
Yeah, cool. Will, where do they find you?
I sort of left Twitter, but if you go to playkin.xyz, you can join the Discord, read our light paper on what we're doing, Playkins.
Good. Playkins is your project. Excellent. And if you want something else to do and you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do so. So every episode, we're talking to people building out this crazy new world of blockchain games. We are on YouTube at Blockchain Gaming World and on Anchor and Spotify, also Blockchain Gaming World. So please subscribe and come back. I guess we'll be in 2023, talking about 2023. Not with you two, but... Sorry.
Could have too much
to do. See you then. Thank you very much.
Cheers, John. Bye.